listen to the Masters Radio. Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
DS 106 Good Spell. Turn your radio on.
Welcome to the DS 106 Good Spell, episode 23. One of 106 mantras and koans that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Hi, good evening, John. How are you?
I'm okay, yeah. And I actually think that we are possibly live without a hitch. I'm not too sure, but it's looking good so far. So, well done.
Yay!
You've got a nice new line here, DS106 Good Spell, futzing splendidly since 2013 on the DS106 Radio for Life. And I can't think of anything lovelier. And if it is since 2013, that makes it about a year we've been here, Mariana, yeah?
I think so. I was thinking about it today. I think it was, whether it was towards the end of 2013,
yeah.
I may be wrong. It might have been the beginning of, but anyway, it seems like it's that's what I thought anyway. We'd have to check. We have to go back and check properly, but... I laughed because I was thinking about that today, about how, you know, we're always trying to push the right buttons at the right time, and I have to get the dog to not bark and all that.
I think a wee chorus or a carol from
we decided that we had too much fun last week, so we're going to be very serious today.
Yeah, well, maybe just. The bullet we were talking about last week was one from your post, of course, which said, "I am in two minds about the value of domain of one's own. The world often lends credibility to breadth rather than depth. And is it need to be both and rather, or either or or?" Now, maybe we should, since we've been slightly more serious, just explain to folk who may pick up the podcast on EduTalk or something, and explain what we mean by a domain of one's own.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that? Or?
Well, I think I'm assuming that the idea we're talking about comes from the idea of Jim Grimm's, and one of the things he always mentions is that it comes from a sort of twisting of Virginia Woolf's quote. That a woman needs a room of one's own if she's to write and be creative. And he also ties into the idea that lots of us publish lots of things online in Flickr and Facebook and Twitter and goodness knows what else people are using now. And that we really lose control of things when we let them go like that. And the idea behind the domain of one's own is to start taking a bit more control, I guess, of what we publish. Does that seem a reasonable summary for...
Well, that was what was behind, because, we said we might include a couple of the other bullets that come after the one we started last week. And that was, you know, the one of the things behind my idea around, you know, talking about sort of... And the choices that we make when we decide to have a mediated self, if you will, that is fragmented all over the place, as you say, fragmented across Facebook or Twitter or everywhere, and or you know, the kind of coherence that having your own domain, your own place where you then might go elsewhere to visit, but you've got your own space. This notion of, you know, the room of one's own. Virginia Woolf also did say that we needed not just a room but money to write. But let's.
Yeah,
she did. The other thing that she did also say was actually it didn't really matter, you know, where we were, but that the main thing was that, you know, we were always, you know, that we were able to write what we wanted when we wanted. So yes, I think it is this thing about the idea of, you know, do you want to build your own house, or do you want to rent a space? And the problem I think we talked about last week with the renting the space, which is, you know, the fragmentations they're using Twitter, using other people's spaces, is that you, from one moment to the next, you just don't know what's going to happen or what they will do with your photos, with your tweets, or with whatever it might be. We also started to talk last week about how, you know, Stephen Dowse talks about how, you know, actually maybe, one way is to think about having your own house and building your own space. And another way might also be to become more of an activist to demand, better rental law. Mm-hmm. If we're going to continue the analogy of the renting the house versus building your own.
It's probably a really good one because I guess eventually you can't really own the whole thing. You know, you can own a domain, you can pay for space on somebody's server, but as we sort of touched on last week, you still are beholden to an awful lot of people. And I think Stephen Downes talks about that, you know, that you can only get so far. And I guess it's a wee bit analogous to as to what you use to make things digitally. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking, you know, you could go to a site where it allows you very easily to make an image of something and add text and all the rest of it, or you could use Photoshop and do that, or you could create your own application, or, you know, or I guess some clever people could do the whole thing and not zeros and ones, but we're still relying on all sorts of different things.
And I do think that there is, you know, the point that Stephen makes is a really valid one, which is that in some ways you could argue that by encouraging people to just, well, go and build your own house, but don't look at all the spaces that we are renting, we start to accept more and more things that are inherently unfair, inherently wrong, and that we shouldn't be accepting. Hmm. Because the fact that we are not paying with cash, but we are paying in other ways. And I think that this notion of, you know, becoming an advocate and demanding better, better service, basically, I do think that it has to go alongside the idea of, yes, have your own space, but know that even that, as you say, that even that you don't totally control. I suppose, you know, to bring it back to the S106, it's this thing of that I think we ended last week saying that, you know, actually, you know, if you are going to want to learn how to build your own house, the S106 is perhaps the best place to learn.
I'm just reminded by a link actually Stephen Downes posted probably today, on Friday, sorry, which is the User Data Manifesto 2.0. And the idea is the manifesto aims at defining users' fundamental rights to their own data in the internet age, which looks like quite an interesting idea. I don't know how well it's developed and how you actually get... but it says, basically, I think we should have these basic rights to control our own data. Mm-hmm. So we should have control over access, knowledge of how the data is stored, and I know that seems quite important actually legally for a lot of people, especially if you're working in education, about and if you live in this country, it seems to be much more acceptable to have things stored in EU servers, for instance, than American servers or Russian servers or whatever. And the third sort of bit of this is that the freedom to choose a platform, so you should always be able to get your data out. And I guess that in that case, it's got to be, you've got to get your data out in a format that it's useful. I remember seeing a while ago of some guy who asked Facebook to, using some law or other, to give them all the information they had on him. And they seem to start sending him DVDs full of PDFs of his content. And there's a huge number of files, but obviously if he wanted to repurpose that, it was almost completely useless, you know. Or very labour-intensive. So I don't know if we need some sort of standardisation or at least something that can take things from one place and put it in another with not too much work.
Well, I suppose that if you start to think of building your own domain as one option amongst others rather than the only option, then all of these other possibilities open up, where maybe you're not talking about an either or choice, but actually you're saying, you know, some of what we need to do is to work towards some kind of format that would be useful and some kind of agreement that we can use, you know, across different platforms. Another thing is about advocating for a sort of basic rights in the kind of way that we have basic rights to, you know, to our lights, to our electricity and our phone. So I think, you know, it's thinking widely about all of these different options rather than narrowing it down to the only solution is having a domain of one's own. Because as we said last week, that just isn't something that everybody wants to do fundamentally. Mm-hmm. Whether they should or should not is a different question from, you know, whether they want to. And so having other options that in some way help, you know, protect people if they choose the fragmented option, if they choose to rent a house. It's like we have various legislations here about, you know, how landlords should behave if they rent a house, don't they? Well, similar kind of thing.
Yeah, there was one in the papers recently where somebody had rented a house or rented a flat in London, or I guess it was a bit of a flat because the access to it was they had to actually duck down and go under a stair, and the space was like 2 or 3 feet high. They had to sort of crawl to get into this property they were renting, and of course that's illegal. It perhaps wouldn't have been illegal a few hundred years ago because there was no protection for people renting places. And I guess what we've seen in the internet is that places that do give you spaces, at the moment we're in a kind of Wild West area where the deal is that we don't read their terms and conditions, and we take what we get. And sometimes they I guess have the rights to change their terms and conditions. I certainly seem to get emails from various services which I largely ignore, saying, oh, our terms and conditions have changed.
Well, that happens much more more and more. I mean, Rochelle is just, I was just checking the Twitter, and Rochelle is just talking about, you know, the net neutrality idea and how that, you know, how that kind of can and will impact the way that the internet is run. And whilst at the moment it's a US thing, as Rochelle says, it isn't really, because if it all goes through over there, what you've got is a setup that will be taken up by other countries, where organizations will be allowed to have a slow lane and a fast lane. So you've lost the neutrality, you've lost many things that I think technically you probably understand better than I do, but you know, fundamentally I can see that the moment that you take that one step, you've lost a lot of what makes the web unique, really. So yes, it's absolutely relevant, the whole net neutrality thing.
It's just kind of maybe slightly paralleled. I noticed that Google are now giving more sort of search juice to sites that serve HTTPS, you know, serve secure sites, and it costs money to do that. So they're basically, if you can afford to have a security certificate on your domain, you will get further up the search rankings, which again, I can maybe understand why they're doing it, or maybe not understand why they're doing it, but it affects you, and it'll affect the size of your audience and your connections. There's a nice site to begin in, which is TOSDR.org. Terms of Service didn't read, and they rate different sites as, you know, from good to very bad on Terms of Service. So it's quite interesting.
So that,
you know,
that might be a good one for people when if they're looking at the different spaces that they can use, because also I think, you know, more and more it isn't a question of you do the rental versus the buying. You know, a lot of us have a domain, will use a domain, but also will use all these other spaces that are given to us. And I guess, you know, that there's all sorts of complex issues about how we do that, about how we use them. And I certainly, I would say from my perspective, before starting the S106, I've always been computer literate, and I'm a techie person and all of that, but I wouldn't have used the internet or the web in the kind of way that that I use it now, since about all the possibilities on the S106. So, you know, there is that thing about learning and about educating yourself in order that you can make purposeful choices, rather than say that, you know, only one place is the best place. Is how I see it.
And I think it's maybe really important for us to explain this to young people, and to look at how people in education use services like this. Because very often it seems to me they were quite, and I have been quite cavalier with young people. We introduce them to an online space because of the affordances of that space, where they can collaborate and all the rest of it. But we don't spell out, and we don't even protect their data. You know, we'll bring them into a school LMS or a national intranet, and these children will produce stuff. They might even keep an e-portfolio there, but we don't really say, well, this is how you get it out at the other end. You know, we don't even really discuss that. We just use it for the time being. I was very interested this week to talk to Ben Weirdmuller.
Yes, you met Ben.
Yeah, who I think I'd talked to before about meeting up in Edinburgh, but kind of slipped my mind until you sent a tweet, and that just kicked that meeting off, actually. So he's the man behind Known, which is a sort of new publishing platform, and he really seems to be, they seem to be moving very much in an educational direction. And it's a fascinating product. At the moment, you can use it either on his domain, or you can set it up on your own. And it does quite a nice job of producing basic posts, but also posting to various other services. And from what I gathered talking to him and having a wee poke around the site, the long-term aims are both to post out to other services and to pull stuff back from other services.
Yeah, which you can do in some ways already, but it's not easy to do. Of course, the DS106 that Jim just finished, the Wire106, run with Known as a hub. They used it for creating the course hub, didn't they?
Mm. Yeah. And I think
Jim seems to be very happy with the result of that experiment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like there's some sort of connection between Known and Reclaim Hosting, for instance, so you can set up a sort of self install of Known on Reclaim Hosting quite easily, which is nice.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if they can get hold of educators and get into education early enough, because it's certainly a good strategy for understanding how these things, how the various tubes can connect up.
I suppose so. That's interesting, John. I hadn't thought about that. You see, sometimes when you understand something, you don't understand that there are different ways that you can easily explain something or not so easily. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's right. In the way that it is designed, known does kind of make explicit all of this kind of linking and connections, so that if somebody was coming into it new, they could understand more how it all works through using it.
Hmm.
That's what you're saying, yeah?
Yeah, and I think it just understand how, and if they do get all the various wires they seem to be aiming to hooking up, it'd be quite interesting. And it sort of bridges this use other services for the affordances they give you and keep your own data in your own space, which I think is quite interesting. But the other thing I kind of briefly talked to Ben about is that some of these other services have got really good ways of posting. Mm. And what you actually need is not the sort of, on those ones, is not the sort of model that currently runs in the one where you use it to post to other spaces, but you actually pull stuff back. So I'm thinking, you know, there's some really nice mobile applications for posting various bits of stuff online. So rather than a service like No One or No One sort of inventing the wheel to do that, what they should do is just, once you've set it up, once you've got the the wires and connections in place, you can just go on using the other services, using Flickr or whatever, but it will automatically like create a backup almost in your site.
Of course, that takes us on to that whole other story about keeping your data, and how many spaces do we keep our data, and how many accounts do we have spread around the world. Talk about fragmentation. How many accounts we have spread around the web that we forget about, but that we keep stuff in. Certainly guilty of not half the time. Did I create an account here? Let me just check.
Yeah. it's usually for me, if it's in one password, it means I've created an account now. So you turn up somewhere and find out you're already a member and have done all these things.
There you go.
You've written in the notes an interesting thing about, and then I'm tending to think of these as places for my stuff, and it's either places I control or this sort of fragmentation. But you link this into the idea of a fragmented self.
Yes, I mean, I think that, and of course, psychologically, that is an interesting thing, isn't it? And when you start to think about your presence on the web being sort of mediated you, at that point, then there are some other interesting questions that you can ask about what is it that you are creating when you are spread around all over the place and effectively fitting yourself to whatever platform you use, because Facebook does not allow you to do anything other than what Facebook is set up for you to do, and so on with all the other platforms. And so this, I wonder, and I kind of, you know, it's more questions than answers, I wonder what it does to our young people, and to us as we more and more work in this kind of way where you just filling a template out, what it does in terms of our development, and our development in terms of our sense of who we are, our sense of, you know.
Oops. It dropped out there. Mariana? Call her again.
You've lost me.
Yeah.
Halfway through my conversation. Can you hear me?
I've got you.
Who knows where you've lost me? I was in a roll. We're still there. We're back.
So we're talking about the templated self. I think that was the idea, wasn't it?
I'm not sure where we lost the sound, but yes, the idea that there is a big difference between you filling in a form to somehow create a digital representation of you. And you creating your own space so that, you know, you have to actually look inwards and pay attention to all of the small things, from color to font to all of these small things that somehow will make up your virtual self. And that's very different from filling a Facebook, you know, a Facebook form or a Twitter profile.
Yeah. So, and this is somebody who doesn't know anything about psychology, obviously asking this question. I'm thinking that on, say, Facebook or Twitter, you've got this templated self. You've only got certain channels for expression and to describe yourself and tell your story.
It's further than that, though. I think that the way I see it is that it's further than that. It stops you engaging at all, because you're literally just responding to questions that you're being asked. And you almost do it in a kind of automated, in the kind of way that you do when you create an account. It's a little bit more than that, but really, which is a very different thing from thinking about who do I want to be online.
Right, it's a lot. It's a lot deeper than I was taking this. I'm just going to pull back from that a wee bit, because there's a few questions and stuff coming in here. There's just people, lots of people. One of the things is Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie is saying, do fragments have a centre? So I guess then, you know, it's something like if you have a blog or something that's spilling out to Twitter and Facebook and things, is that your centre, your online centre?
Well, it's different, isn't it? I mean, I've been exploring this because, you know, that I've created my secret domain where I'm it's all under construction. And it is an interesting thing where your center is. It's a really interesting question that Stephanie, you know, brings up. Like where your center is, and where do you have a kind of emotional attachment to, mm-hmm. as well? I've got various formal places, but I must say that the little site that I created for I've been playing with the S106 at York College, the one that's just been running, and I've been kind of running along with it, and I created a little site on there just as a plaything, and I've got really attached to it. I love writing on it.
It's
a very different thing from writing in other spaces. And I know that you could argue, well, it can be that different. But I do think there is a different sense. Say, for example, when you write an article on Medium, have you ever written?
No, anything? I've seen it.
Well, it's a very different experience from when you write an art, when you write a blog post, or when you write in different spaces. And I suppose the point, and to take it back to the domain of one's own, you know, the point is that if you're not just reacting to questions that people are asking, you know, so fill in your name, do you want red, green, or blue? If you have a blank slate and you have to make decisions, that there are things that you need to question, that you need to reflect on, that you need to think about. So, you know, why blue and not black? You know, why this and not that? Which you actually don't get to do when, you know, everybody's profile looks the same.
Yeah, you're in some sense. So I'm quite interested in the York College thing. So was this on, it was on their site, their infrastructure, their, was it?
No, it's my platform? Own, my own domain right. That I bought to play. I was curious about the reason I got it was as an extra thing, because I wanted to learn about setting up multi-sites. Mm-hmm. And I did that with this domain, and my idea was that then I could create a subdomain, a site for each each MOOC or each course that I did, if I did anything, I could have its own little space. Mm-hmm. And I was just playing around with connected courses because this was the connection with it. I, you know, when they started to talk about setting up your domain so that you could have different courses, blah, blah, blah. And I set it up for that. And then the York College thing came up and I thought, oh, I could make one for that. And I just started playing with it. I mean, genuinely, it was just a playful thing. Mm. And I picked some theme that, you know, I guess it turned out to be a theme I liked and I liked writing in. And then when I published the way it rendered the thing, it was actually very lovely because there's lots of spaces. It's very wide. It's beautiful. and I suppose I noticed this thing.
Yeah.
And it is different from your standard bog standard boring WordPress.com thing, for example.
That's one of the reasons that I haven't got a great deal of taste, I don't think, as anybody who looks any size I've built.
Oh, John, that's rubbish.
But, you know, some people will name that font and will tell you how much leading they're using and stuff like that, you know. I haven't a clue, but something like Facebook I find sort of just messy and not pleasant to look at.
It's all of those things, of course. And again, you know, if we take it back to the S106, you know, in learning, and in fact, I have in doing this, the York College one, I've been focusing on that much more, this whole thing about making choices and making aesthetic choices does teach you an awful lot about, you know, about who you are, about what matters, about your values, about your identity, about what, you know, and you have to reflect on those things. Where the idea of, you know, just filling in a template, the kind of, you know, cookie cutter approach to, you know, to education, I suppose it is that distinction, isn't it? It's the distinction between the one size fits all, versus you actually have to create a unique identity. The more digitally aware that you are and the more that you know how to build your own house.
Yeah. So last week, Mariana, and at the start of this week, we kind of got the impression that you were pushing back quite hard against the domain of one's own. and you're swinging around here now to it, really. And seeing the you know, the goodness that it brings, not necessarily. And I think some of the things we've talked about that are the initial, what you think of as the initial positives about a domain of one's own, are probably not. But
how are you thinking that? Say more.
So the you know, control of your data. I don't really control the data that, you know, it's on various servers, some of which I rent a wee tiny bit of space on. But if the server goes down and the backup server fails, or, you know, if they go out of business, I'm fairly likely to have lost that stuff. But what we're actually saying is that what we get out of it is not so much that ownership, but we get knowledge and understanding of online spaces.
We get perhaps a closer and a better understanding about who we are online, who we want to be. We can make more purposeful choices about, you know, the what elements of who we are we want to show. And of course, if we have the willingness to learn about the technical side of it, it does give us the tools then to be able to create that virtual self in a way that fits. And I think it can be a way into understanding yourself better. Really, and if you think, go back to the original idea of the personal cyber infrastructure, and what the intent of that was very much a sense of, you know, give the students their own space, make them create their own site, help them understand how to do all of that, and then work together to learn and do some serious critical reflection around what their site says about them.
Yeah.
That's kind of, well, at one level, one would argue from an educational point of view, that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not whether I keep the data or not.
Yeah. You probably should have some of it, I think. But she was asking some questions around this.
I know, there are logs, but I can't keep up.
It's starting with, who do I want to be online, you know, which is good. But then she's saying, constructed identities, how does that affect youth development? And really, maybe it is. Let's change that question again. Should we in education be offering young people spaces that are not as templated as the ones they will flock to naturally? Then quite often I've thought of using online spaces for children because we assume that they are used to digital spaces. But maybe what we should be doing in part is offering them spaces which are not the same. I was talking to some pupils the other day, and they were in their school, they were using a couple of different platforms for working online, one of which was Edmodo, and I asked them, you know, which one did they like, and they said, oh, we like Edmodo the best. But and basically they liked it because it was similar to Facebook, which is where they're used to working. And you can see the attraction for educators. We'll give them something that looks like Facebook.
Yeah, well, and of course at that point then, you know, you start to say, actually it is easier, it is what they're used to. They can then, you know, do what they do on Facebook as well as do the learning, and I can see where all the attraction for that is. But I guess the point then is it's wider than DS106 and wider than domains of one's own. It's more of a kind of, as a society, what are we encouraging and what do we want to teach our children? And sometimes that means going against the stream, doesn't it? I for example, you know, I mean, I was at my brother had a baby a little while ago, and we were talking about the screen thing, and, you know, the iPad, you know, how babies get quite early on. Well, actually, if you look, there is quite a lot of research to suggest that you shouldn't really put babies in front of a screen until they're about 3 years old. There is a majority of people that ignore that, don't know about that, but the research is there. And I was talking about this with my brother, and they said that they were finding it really, really difficult to make the choice that was clearly the right choice to make, which is don't do it. Yeah, mm-hmm. don't put your kid in front of the iPad for hours before, because it's not a good idea, because their lifestyle was such that they didn't know how they could do that. And if you transfer that idea to, you know, us as educators, I think that often it is this whole issue of, you know, expediency.
Yeah,
we want something that's easy, that's quick, and that's quick, and we don't get paid for all the amount of time that we invest in you know, in doing what we do with our students. And so, you know, that does have a big bearing on the choices we make about the platforms we use, I guess.
Yeah,
it's a bigger question, I think. It's a much bigger question, which is about society and the values that we want to uphold.
I'm just thinking back, and it's a fair number of years now, about a quarter century, to my own daughter was born, and my wife and I sort of decided that we wouldn't really have her watching television when she was young. And we managed fine until she was two. Which I think is not too bad. But by that time, she was starting to socialise and visit other people's houses and, you know, with other children, she would be watching television. And that was, I mean, there was no, we didn't have a computer, we didn't have, you know, there wasn't any iPads. I certainly didn't have a mobile phone or anything like that. And it was just so much easier then, and it's probably very, very tricky as an adult, because all around children are seeing people interacting with these devices and things like that. And I guess we're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be able to be a Puritan about this, but you maybe can take some reasonable decisions for your children.
Exactly.
We're way over, and I think we'll probably need to talk about a couple of things. Rochelle's saying not everyone has the tech or the dollars to build and learn on site. What do you do with that? Don't know, Rochelle. I'm guessing it's not actually so much about dollars. It's maybe time.
Maybe it's also, I think this does speak to this idea of offering choice and helping people be aware of the consequences of the choices they're making. And I think as parents...
Oops. You can hear me. I'm just going to ring Mariana for the last time, and I think then we'll wrap up the show. I'm obviously having Skype woes tonight.
Hello. We done.
Hi, Mariana. We're
watching splendidly since 13.
I actually think it's because I'm relying on Wi-Fi instead of my Ethernet cable tonight. The wee clippy thing's just about falling off the Ethernet cable, so I need to get a new Ethernet cable. I think that's maybe why I'm having trouble. Anyway, as we were saying, it's getting on. There's a couple of things I think we should touch upon. One is that there's a new season of DS106 coming up after Christmas. Do you know exactly when that's happening?
Spring term is what I know. I don't know the exact date.
Right. And somebody, I think, sent us a bumper for that.
Yes, for the it's the film noir. Jim is doing the film noir, so it's. Using the Noir106 hashtag on Twitter, and he sent a tweet a little while ago saying, "If you want to be, to participate, then let him know." And we did a daily create just to sort of advertise that and to create a bumper for it. And I think that may be the bumper that you're going to use to play us out.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. I'll probably do that then. That sounds good. And again, just as you're trying to kick the DS106 habit, Jim comes up with an idea to hook you back in again. I'm certainly interested in listening. He's taught film noir, or I think literature noir rather, hard boiled type stuff before, and I've noticed read posts in his blogs and things about that. So it sounds as if that'll be good fun. And who knows, people will maybe create their own spaces to do it, or they may just use something else. Any final thoughts on...
We need to say happy birthday, Jim.
Oh.
Not because it's his birthday, but because it's the 9 years since he started his blog.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he published this thing, and it was so sweet because he is such a big softy, isn't he? He's even attached to his chair where he writes his blog posts. I mean, really, he's lovely. So anyway, we should do whatever you wish to people when they have a birthday blog or a blog birthday. So there you go. Not relevant to our topic, but relevant to Jim and his blog.
His blog. He's been posting in a domain of his own for a while there.
For 9 years. There you go. At least.
Yeah. And the other thing is, we're kind of wrapping it up for the year now, I think. This is, I think I said it was episode 23, which means it's the 25th. Episode of the DS106 Good Spell, but we intend to be back the last, and I've forgotten the date now, the last Sunday in January. We're going to have a break over Christmas and New Year, and then we'll come back and continue loading up some more 106 of the 106 bullets, Mariana.
So, 25th of January.
25th, cool.
Yep.
Right, looking forward to it. And just thanks very much to everybody that's been tweeting along, putting their tuppence worth in. I can see tonight. Rochelle, Sheila, Alan, Ian, Stephanie have popped some tweets in, so that's lovely. It's lovely to be talking to Mariana, but also it's interesting not to be talking into a vacuum, Mariana, I think, which always makes it nice.
I know, our million listeners. I'm so happy with our million.
Yeah. Well, they always say more. Anyway, so we'll call it a wrap.
Happy holidays, as they say. Happy holidays, yeah, as they say in America.
And I hope I will manage to play out this bumper correctly. As we go, folks. So, yeah.
Wow! I can't wait to do another assignment. I'm wired. I'm on fire. Create, create, create! I can't get enough of this. Coming spring 2015. Sleepless DS 106.